Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Talebi, and tackling your questions this evening are Rikus Riedis from PSG Wealth Santon and Willem Oldewacher from Nitrogen Fund Managers. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Rikus, Willem, good to see you both here this evening. Rikus, if I may start with you tonight. It was a so-so finish for the JSE, not great. We closed in the red, but not dramatically so. The rand, though, has weakened considerably since this time last week. I mean, we're down almost a buck against the dollar. And then there was a bit of a collapse in shares like Anglo American and Kumba, especially. Was that an indication that there was just too much froth in the Kumba share price in particular, that the shares came off 12% today? Or was that production update that they came out with this morning really that bad?
I think it's more the last. In other words, the production update itself, because if you take a look at, for example, Billiton, I think lost about 0.75%. So in a resource market that's been a little bit negative over the past few days, all you need is an extra dollop of bad news in the form of Anglo's and related companies' production updates for the quarter, and that will have that kind of effect. So obviously, it's changed the numbers for the year somewhat, but I don't think it's, you know, it's the end of resources, you know, or of the cycle in itself.
Willem, if you were looking at this, if you were holding Kumba shares, would you just take a soothing beverage this evening and continue holding them? Or would you sell them? Or would you buy some more on the back of this?
Yes, so if I was holding them, I'd definitely hold on. But I think Rikus is sort of hitting the nail on the head there. If you look at the last, I think, 5 to 6 quarterly updates from the Anglo stable, so Anglo American, Anglo Platinum, and Kumba, they've always underperformed just a tiny bit, and the market sort of avoided the, I don't know, the cat in the hen house, like, because the commodity prices were so good. And today was the first day where the market sort of took notice of the fact that they aren't performing operationally, and they've sort of have leaned very heavily on buoyant commodity markets. So I think the reaction is a bit of an overreaction. If you look at the rand, like, blowing out in the opposite direction, and iron ore still strong, I don't think a 2% drop in guidance for Kumba is a problem. But I think the overall sort of theme from the updates of the last year have been pretty poor, to be honest.
And you're saying that across the Anglo stable, Kumba, Anglo Platinum, and Anglo American itself?
Exactly, yeah. I think AMS also fell quite a bit, at least in relation to the other platinum miners today.
Yeah. I mean, is this what's going to be happening in some of the commodity shares, that the minute prices start turning, you're going to see who's, who's just been winging it as a result of high commodity prices, and it's going to separate, I use a whole bunch of cliches here, the wheat from the chaff, the men from the boys. Is this really what's going to show the quality operators from those that actually aren't, Rikus?
Yeah, I think it comes down to operational cost and efficiency, and more macro views. Obviously, what is happening in China as far as the commodity market itself is concerned. So it's a bit of an economy. In other words, how much, with China being in a economic downturn, I mean, there's no doubt about that. Is that going to reduce the demand? And then on the other side, there hasn't been development in mining to even at lower levels produce enough in the longer term. And you add to that your possible disruption of supply from Russia. So it really is a seesaw between your biggest consumer, or one of your biggest consumer of resources, the availability of future production, and, as I've said, the wild card, the sanctions on Russia at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not entirely sure what's happened to our graphs, because it would show you just how dramatic the performance was today in both Anglo Platinum, Kumba, and Anglo. But we shall move on to Naspers, and there's a question on Naspers and Prosus. The Naspers is just, can you ask the panel's view on Naspers? And as far as Prosus is concerned, the question, if I pull it up here, excuse me, is... As Prosus shares have halved this year, I'd like to know if you think one should hold them and if there's any chance of recovery or cut your losses. Willem, what do you think?
Yes, so I mean, I think that's a great question, and it's a great theme on the JSE, as it used to be one of the biggest stocks in the top 40 and in the sort of SWIX. But to be honest, the value is there. So it is worth understanding. I think Naspers trades at a 66% discount and Prosus at a 55% discount. But unfortunately, there's a human condition where we believe that means it can't get any worse, and I think it can get worse. And it's just a function of flow and investors voting with their feet. Unfortunately, the last 5 to 6 years has been marred by poor sort of investment decisions. Nothing's worked, even buying their own shares. They did that at 1,300 Rand or something. So that's also been a mistake. So I think the market's terribly frustrated with the current sort of basket of stocks in the Naspers Prosus portfolio. But in all honesty, it doesn't even matter. I think Prosus is still made up 85% of Tencent. So if you were to throw away everything they've done over the last 5 years, you'd still be left with a 40% discount to Tencent, which is fairly cheap at the moment. And the Rand was strong until recently, which means that it's mispriced, but it doesn't mean it's going to get better soon. But if you are prepared to hold it for 3 to 5 years, especially considering the lockup in Tencent, there will be a value unlock at some point. Mm. It's just going to take a while.
I mean, I suppose that's cold comfort to people who maybe bought in at the high or 2 years ago, or people who have held on, you know, for the past 5 years and seen what became, you know, the best investments in the world diminish. Rikus, would you have a similarly sanguine and circumspect view to Willem? Sanguine in that you should maybe hold on, the market is mispricing us, but it's going to take a while. Or do you think there's just better opportunities if it does take that long for maybe the discount to narrow or the shares to find their feet again, that you would rather put your money somewhere else?
No, I think you nailed it with your last statement. What's the opportunity cost of holding on to Prosus or Naspers or Tencent if there's better prospects elsewhere? So what Willem said is correct, you know, as far as Tencent is concerned. Obviously, you cannot discount the size and the market of that company. There's a possibility that whatever Naspers buys next, rather than food delivery or whatever, might be a great performer, or that what they've got in their portfolio will do well. But those are all possibles and maybes and whatever. In the meantime, sitting with the share waiting for a recovery, why not go into something that that doesn't have all that kind of questions surrounding it? I mean, the only thing going for it at the moment is the discount. That, you know, you'll only concentrate on that if you're going to invest in it. Rather go and take a look at something else, which we don't have all that doubt surrounding it. In other words, you know, just top of my head, I'd rather be in Microsoft than in Tencent or Naspers or Prosus.
Mm. How about Tesla? I'm going to mention it here because I'm sure both of you are going to poo-poo me. But Tesla, which I didn't realize was close to a thousand PE ratio. I mean, that's just nuts. Rallied 10% on the back of its results. Willem, what did you make of that? I mean, that is astonishing. And especially, I was looking at some of the reports, the earnings that they produced, which beat the market expectations, were partly flattered by these regulatory credits. That's not even, you know, earnings profit that you're making from the back of the sale of your vehicles. Why
yes,
do you think the market is so
results,
excited?
I mean, the results were good. They were a beat on Wall Street's estimates. But having said that, it's a beat on a very small number. So it's like expecting, if you expect 1 cent and somebody makes 2 cents, then suddenly you outperform by 50 or 100%. So it's easy for a company sort of coming through the sort of from a negative to a positive margin to beat. But then, like we said, Tesla is so expensive. It's worth more than Toyota or VW, who produce, let's say, 100 times the cars, produce and sell 100 times the cars Tesla does. So, I mean, it's really a meme stock. I don't know if you realize they published the results on 420, which is a marijuana reference. The price Elon pays for Microsoft ends on a 420. He was prepared to buy Tesla at 420 a while back. So the whole thing's he's got a crowd following him and it's working. This is like the madness of crowds. Hmm. But as an investment, I cannot believe that you could justify that to your investors at all. Like we said, at 1,000 PE, it's going to take 1,000 years to make your money back. And none of us have that sort of time horizon in our retirement.
No. Yes, that's all. I mean, no matter how long, how extensive longevity becomes. I mean, Rick, what do you make of that? The madness of the market in with regards to Tesla, because we know that these highly priced tech stocks, especially if interest rates are rising and you're starting to see the ECB, you know, they're going to be rising, lifting interest rates. These tech shares that kind of rely on very, very, very low interest rates to justify some of the valuations have been unwinding, but not a Tesla. And then you've got Elon Musk's, the distraction of this Twitter bid, where, you know, you're pledging some of your own stock as collateral. I mean, to me, that all just, if you add it up, it's all just a recipe for disaster. And you kind of wonder why the market's kind of brushing this aside.
Well, I think on a philosophical point, the market is underpinned by value, but it's driven by sentiment. And Tesla is an extreme example of extreme sentiment. So I agree with Willem. You know, I want to sleep at night. I don't want to be worrying about Tesla's share price. So maybe there's still lots to be made if you're, I hesitate to call it an investor in the stock. But again, it is a meme stock, as you've said. And it is driven by the crowd and it's driven by one man's ego.
Yeah. Which is quite phenomenal that the crowd is prepared to put up with one man's ego. I'm not sure if Bright discussed Netflix much on the show last night, but do you think that was a justified reaction? So just as much as Tesla shares rallied today at 10% 1 point and 6% now, according to that chart, was it a justification for Netflix shares to get clobbered the way they did? Willem, do you think that was fair?
I think the Netflix share price is a great warning for anyone who buys an overvalued stock. Just because the marginal liquidity trades at a certain price doesn't mean, you know, you can trade half the company or 10% of the company at the same price. So for Netflix, it traded an astonishing amount, so 500 billion rand last night. And if you want to sell 500 billion rand of Netflix, you have to take a 30% haircut. And I think the same thing actually applies to Tesla. It's just that nobody wants to sell yet. So floating up high, whether it's justified or not. The company's never made money, you know. It's like it's so typical of this low interest rate stimulatory environment. And like you said, they are so sensitive. So never mind the fact that they lost viewers and are guiding to lose 10 times more viewers than they lost in the coming quarter. Interest rates are also coming for them. So I think probably justified.
Rick, it's just maybe one last point here. Is there a point, though, at which the share starts to represent decent value? So you take all those things into account. Or is that quite a long way away from where we are still? And I mean, it has more than, it's down, what, its high was 700. It's now sort of just above $200 a share. Do you think it could easily fall further, or do you think it's looking reasonable?
I think I'd have to start out from, my base motive when I take a look at a company. It's not the current earnings or the historical earnings, it's what is going to change the company's earnings profile a year, 2 years, 3 years from now. And that's precisely what Netflix is, or the problem they are sitting with. The model as is not working, and there's sort of a corollary with Tesla. They were market leaders in their field, as much as Tesla is a market leader as far as electric vehicles are concerned. But once your competition catches up, you have to do something to change it. And Netflix has already spoken with it as far as content is concerned, as far as going into gaming is concerned, et cetera, et cetera. That's not a one-year strategy. That's a 3-4-year strategy, if it works. So in that sense, I would want to see where the dust settles as far as the price is concerned, and then see whether the new direction that they have to take is actually working out for them, if that will change the earnings profile going forward, and then I will consider, okay, this is maybe something I want to invest in.
Yeah. The question came through a little later last night on the luxury goods companies, and it was on which stock between Hermes International and Louis Vuitton would be the best buy for the longer term. Willem, do you have a look at any of the international luxury brands outside of Richemont, and do you have a view on either of these two?
Yeah, between those two, I'd go for Louis Vuitton, Moët Hennessy, just because of sort of long-term growth and scale. Luxury did very well, and now it's doing less well, but I'm not a big fan of luxury at all. I think it's like poor taste to look rich. But if I had to invest in a company that does that, I think the Arnault family, I think is the guy's surname, Bertrand Arnault, I think. They've been doing it for a very long time, and they really understand the market. So that's like a simple pick between those two for me.
Yeah. Willem, I'm afraid the Instagram influencers have completely passed you by, because crass consumerism is where it's at, and luxury bags no more so. Rikus, do you have a view also on Richemont itself? You know, Richemont had a stellar year last year. This year it's had a tough one. Although it seems to have maybe found its footing a little bit. And I wonder if the Rand kind of weakens a little bit, whether maybe you're going to see a bit of a recovery in Richemont's shares.
That certainly has helped the local price over the past 2 or 3 days. But the national price has picked up as well. I think, you know, there's a story that luxury brands are sort of recession-proof, because obviously they get sold specifically at the high end of the markets to people who don't really suffer from a recession. So in that sense, it's not a bad place to be. I'm just not sure whether with Richemont at current prices, it is as safe as one would assume if one does have the fear that we are heading for a global recession. So that being said, if there is price weakness, and let's say another 10-15% fall, I think it would be very attractive at those levels.
And do you look at either of the or any of the international groups, because there are a couple of others? So otherwise, other than Hermes or Louis Vuitton, there's Kering. Actually, there's not too many. There's Moncler, I think, Burberry.
I think it depends on two things. The breadth, shall I say, of the products they sell and who they sell to. Now, as you mentioned with Instagram, I think that's where your market is, because I think that generation is probably where your spending power is going to be in future. And historically, it's always been a question of what can I afford to make myself look good against my compatriots. So it certainly is branding and then history, and in that sense, I agree with Willem. I'd be perfectly happy with Louis Vuitton if I want to go into that.
Yeah. Okay. What about RMI? The question is, please ask the panel if RMI is good value at current levels. Willem, I'm sort of because if you've been buying RMI, you're essentially buying the entity or the vehicle which will become Outsurance. So, is that how we should be thinking of RMI at the moment?
So the short answer is no, it's no longer good value. It carried the dividend insanely well yesterday. If you took the prices from the day before, I think it was up 10-15% the rump, which we would say is Outsurance. So that's odd. Generally, these things do so much worse when that happens. But it was a great idea sort of to get into it before they spun out the MTM stake. And maybe actually the MTM Momentum Metropolitan is a better buy now just because of the overhang. But no, it's no longer cheap. It's like it did very well from the after the unbundling.
Yeah, Rikus, would you be interested in what will become Outsurance against some of the other short term? I mean, look, you don't have a huge amount of choice on the JSE. You've got Santam. I suppose Mutual and Federal then became Old Mutual Insurer, so it's within the Old Mutual stable. You will have Outsurance. We never talk about Clientele Life, but I suppose that's, you know, life insurance, and it's not short-term insurance. Would it tempt you at all?
I'm not fond of short-term insurance companies because you cannot quantify the risk. Let's take a look at KwaZulu-Natal, for example. So in that sense, you can model, and then something happens and you take a huge hit. So there's no consistency as far as your earnings profile is concerned. I mean, it's great while the going is good. I mean, people pay their premiums every month and it goes up, you know, every year, but it's that unexpected event or a series of events that can wipe out years of doing well. So in that sense, no, neither Santam nor OUTsurance for that matter.
Willem, can I get your view, and perhaps we can pull up the chart of Santam, because I actually haven't had a look at it since, over the last week, I must confess. So I'm not sure if the market has whacked it with the ferocity that the KZN province was hit by these storms. Is it going to be somewhat catastrophic for them, do you think? Because, there we've got the chart up. The market doesn't seem to think so at all.
I think you're right. It's bad, but it's not the end of the world. And pragmatic insurers will tell you that claims are good because that's why people insure. So if there weren't any claims ever, they wouldn't exist. So it's a bit of a, you know, is it bad or is it good that there's a storm in Natal? This reminds people, and you'll be surprised, I know of people in the insurance industry, how many people catch up their late premiums when something like this happens. So I don't think the earnings not going to be as bad. I saw a headline. Please don't quote me on this, but I think it was like 250 million rand for OUTsurance, which doesn't sound like a lot at all in the sort of earnings profile. And I think Santam would be similar. So
yeah. Okay, so no catastrophe at this stage, but you sort of wonder if it's maybe Sasria that's going to. So maybe the rest of us will have to bear the burden of the cost of insuring for these floods. Anything else that struck your eye today? I had a look at Astoria. I don't know if it's too small and beneath the radar for either of you, but my colleague Mark Hossenfuss had written on it recently, and he said he had to look twice because it was Transhex declaring a dividend. Now, Transhex was a small diamond mining company that skirted bankruptcy many years and then was eventually delisted. And it's mostly owned by Astoria, although they've sold a chunk of it back to one of the Transhex shareholders. Anyway, Astoria's getting a nice fat dividend from Transhex. It's investing in a sort of marine diamond mining outfit. And the shares were up 12.75% today. Rikus, I don't know if this is one that you still look at. It's got the people, Jan van Niekerk and Piet Viljoen of RECM involved there. Is this at all of interest?
Honestly, I haven't followed the story. I know Transex is in their portfolio. I'm not sure what else is.
Is it Gold Rush Investments?
And they have gaming? Gold Rush, as far as I know. So that's a nice little money spinner when things go, when things go well. I can't believe Transnex has actually paid out a dividend. I mean, it's alluvial money in the,
what feels like a bit of it was a dividend of 43 million rand. So maybe for people who haven't even heard of Transnex, and we are all displaying our age here by talking about it, it's quite an event, but maybe just a curiosity, really, for any other punters out there.
I think the main driver, though, is going to be Gold Rush as far as their biggest investment is concerned. But yeah, as I said, it's nice to hear that alluvial mining in the Gariep is actually paying out a dividend. I mean, it's extraordinarily difficult to get any kind of consistent income stream from that kind of operation. It's like mining gold in Barberton. I mean, one day you strike it rich, and then for the next 2-3 months, you don't get anything. So I'll leave it at that then.
Yeah. Willem, do you have a look at a story at all? It completely changed its character. You know, it was initially set up to be an investment company that would invest in offshore assets, and then, you know, it went through a whole, you know, bout of change. So maybe people just ignore it completely now.
Yes, I had a quick look today because I remember I was young when it listed. I was like 14, 15, and I participated in the IPO, believe it or not, for my PA. I don't own any more of the shares. can't remember what happened. But it trades like 20 to 30 grand a day. So no institutional investor is ever going to come and buy it. It's cheap. I think it was like a 5p. I just looked in my head quickly, like the earnings to the reported earnings for the latest period to their price. So it's not expensive. But the problem with something like that is nobody's ever going to come and unlock the value unless you get a takeout from something like Long for Life, you know, like an old mutual private equity. You're just going to sit on a cheap stock.
Yeah, sadly. All right. Well, then I shall get to your stock picks this evening. And sticking with you, Willem, what are you keen on?
So I'm going to go for Netcare. It's a bit of a cheeky one, but it's an easy one to call because both Mediclinic South Africa and the Life Healthcare numbers, or their, at least their trading statements, came out. And what is happening is the elective surgeries post-COVID are picking up. So Netflix just takes a bit – Netcare just takes a little bit longer to produce their trading statement, but there's every indication that it will be good. And I think investors were just waiting for a print that proves that their theory is correct. And like I said, the other two groups have proven that, so I'm pretty sure the Netcare results will be as good or better than the other two hospital groups. So there's my stock pick.
Can I just ask you, though, is this for a longer-term hold, or is it sort of a brief, the rebound from COVID, people having delayed surgeries to this point? Are you expecting this to be a one-off, or do you think that actually there may be some sustained gains?
I mean, it's still growth at a reasonable price. I can't recall off the top of my head. I haven't looked at it in a week or two, but I think something like a 12 PE with maybe 10 to 15% annualized growth, it's still good. So it's just cheap right now. But if you can buy it and hold it, I don't think there's any problem with that.
Okay. Rikus, and how about you?
Well, I'm still worried about a global recession. And apart from healthcare, which tends to, well, I won't say do well, but performs okay during a recession. The other is financials, and there my topic is MasterCard. They are not recession-proof, but even if they go down, if you really hit a wall as far as markets are concerned, they will be the first to recover. Okay. Mainly because their profit is based on transaction volume. They don't have any debtors or anything like that, and their profit margins are huge. So in that sense, you might not make any money, but you certainly won't lose a lot, and you'll probably make it back pretty quick once we get a global growth, economic growth outlook again.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's hope the global recession fears aren't overblown. Let's hope they are. Rikus, Willem, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this evening. Nice to chat to you both. Rikus Redis is from PSG Wealth Sandton, and Willem Oldewager is from Nitrogen Fund Managers. And we'll be back with Stockwatch next week. Have a good evening.